I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello, gang. Well, what a weekend of rugby that was. Spectacular. Who'd have thought, hey? Who'd have thought we'd have got those results? Contrary to all those odds, there were home wins for Italy and for England, whilst France powered their way to that win in Cardiff. Now, sitting opposite me with a big smile on his face is Evening Standard Steve Cording. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Lawrence. What a weekend indeed. Yes, I am I'm a little bit richer, having taken the bookies to the cleaners. Well, not quite to the cleaners.
Well, they were 4-1 England. 4-1.
I got 5.3-1 on the exchange. I know, yeah. I had £20 on that, so that paid for the evening out, which was good. But what an atmosphere at Twickenham. Not seen it like that for a long time. I mean, you've said it many, many times. If the team turns up and performs, then the crowd will respond. And they did.
As I said in my Sunday Times article, I said, England are trying to redevelop the stand, but if they play like that, with the noise like that, it'll fall down on its own, really. But listen, joining us down the line and probably slightly less happy is a man who made over 250 appearances for Leinster, earned 82 caps for his country and toured twice with the British and Irish Lions. It is Gordon Darcy. Hi, Gordon. How are you, my friend?
I'm not too bad, guys. How are you all doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Gordon, you were up in commentary with Ben Kay, who was our guest on the podcast last week. Was he behaving himself at the end of the game, or did you get a bit of friendly banter from him?
Oh, no, it was very much a kind of sitting there for a couple of minutes afterwards, almost an appreciation of the rugby that was there. I wouldn't say the same in the kind of post-match box I was in. I didn't offer a few insights. Andy Goode was his usual humble self. And yeah, a couple of gentlemen who'd had more than a little to drink felt the absolute urge to explain exactly why and how we had lost repeatedly. So that was interesting. But Ben was very good. As I said, it was you literally had to sit there and just go, wow, that was a proper test match. It was good to see.
The place was absolutely jumping, wasn't it? Steve, how was your match day experience?
It was great. I have to have a little moan. We had one gentleman sat behind us. I'll call him a gentleman for now. I didn't call him that on Saturday, who was refusing to not throw beer over everybody in front of him while the game was going on, when tries were being scored. I did speak to the stewards. They didn't throw him out. It was very disappointing, I have to say. I know it's a minority. The atmosphere there was superb on the whole, but it just spoils it for everybody else, doesn't it, when people can't take their drink? Anyway, I think win or lose, regardless of that, we've said it before, ban that sale of alcohol when the game's going on and make a big difference. But I don't want that to detract from what was a superb occasion. Lawrence, you were clearly also enjoying the atmosphere. What did you make of Lawrence's jig on the side of the pitch? Have you seen that, Gordon? You must have seen the clip.
No, he was busy commentating.
He was going and then he stopped and then he started again. You couldn't control yourself, could you, really?
Well, of course not.
I was worried for his white runners and then he was going to slip and maybe break a hip.
Let me tell you that the noise at Twickenham, I haven't heard noise like that in the last, you know, a few minutes of that game.
Yeah, it was good. It was special.
Because, you know, it's raw, it's real, it's, you know, it's proper emotion from the entire stadium. It was absolute bedlam on the final whistle.
But, yeah, I have to say, if you do that again, though, next time you'll be up on stage with Brag and Bone Man, won't you, at halftime, leading the singing.
Listen, as Mark Pugac quite eloquently put it, he said, Ireland are human after all, that's for sure.
Nice.
And that's the closing line. But, but listen, we'll have Rag and Bone Man every week if it makes England play like
he
that.
He was good as well, wasn't he? I was surprised. Yeah, 10 minutes, but no, brilliant.
Yeah.
Gordon, you mentioned there that obviously you came across a few Englishmen who probably weren't gracious in victory after the game. But I have to say, from Ireland's perspective, from Andy Farrell down, everybody else who spoke after the game was very, very gracious in defeat. And he did say Andy, that they have to be good at losing as well as gracious winners. I guess it's easier said than done. Did you speak to any of the players after the game and were they feeling the same way? I guess they're all philosophical and they've still got a championship to win.
Yeah, like I think, you know, you have to be balanced in it and kind of, I think, I remember, so just immediately after the game, had either team won it, they would have rightfully felt that they won that game. And then had either team lost it, they could equally say, oh, we lost that game. So Ireland will look at that and go, there was lots of things within their control, as will England. That's how tight of a test match this would be. I was saying in the lead up to the game as well, what would have been the most worrying thing for me for English rugby had England not come out and shown a disciplined, passionate performance. And they did that. And they showed what they are capable of. But that was a very, very emotional performance. And it showed that pressure was coming on this group of players. And they responded in kind. But the script was written, you know, 3 weeks out, the loss to Scotland, the underperformance in the opening two matches, and the questions starting to be asked. So that's what I was saying. If that performance hadn't been delivered by England, that would have been a huge red flag for, you know, the players, you know, their ambitions, their, you know, the pride in playing for their country, all those things that sometimes we take for granted. And I love that they did show up. I kind of said as well, I wanted Ireland, if they were going to win it, I wanted them to earn it. And that was a game they definitely would have earned.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, listen, Gordon, you know, looking at from Ireland's perspective, I mean, that's only their, fourth defeat in about 25 test matches. So, you know, it's always easy for people like myself to talk about England and how positive they were. But Steve Borthwick obviously stuck with a group of players, the same group of players that by and large, that 2 weeks previously had played, you know, so poorly. And then suddenly 2 weeks later, you get that trust, that confidence, and they produce that performance out of nowhere. Gordon, who have been the standout players, did you think, in that performance that made the difference?
Yeah, like, I think the guys who were most unpredictable for England are the guys that caused Ireland the most trouble. So you look at, say, Ben Earl on that break for Peter O'Mahony's yellow card. Like, he literally just steps off the left foot and starts heading back to the ruck. And just finds a little hole and just goes completely off the game plan and heads up and gets a line break. How many line breaks did he get from just taking a little bit of, being a little bit selfish? And sometimes, even in a team environment like that, you kind of go, there's a safety in structure and, you know, that ability to go, well, the team sheet says this, we get into this kind of game plan, we get into this system, and there's a safety in that. Takes an awful lot of courage to go outside of that system sometimes. And a couple of players did that at the weekend. So I think Ben Earls definitely was one of them. I think Chesham at six, I think he was very good. And I thought Freeman and Furmack and
Faye Bosa.
So I thought those guys just, they weren't confined to a system. And they just popped up in places you didn't expect them to be. They broke the defensive line. And in truth, we struggled with that. I think the first, like, a good example would that be with the first try. It was Ben Earls who put James Lowe under incredible pressure, and James Lowe gets kind of a, we'd call it an agricultural Gaelic kick away, but it doesn't go where he wants it to go. And Freeman just, you see the diagonal he takes off on, and it cuts off about, I would say, 80% of the Irish defensive line, just by his pace and his ambition. And it's because of the poor kick, not the poor kick, but the kick goes infield, and he's able to hit it at full tilt, and he's already cuts off half of the Irish defence, or, you know, most of the Irish defence, and they have already made 4-on-2 in the wider channel, and Ireland just couldn't recover from that. So that, you know, those are the guys I thought that just, they added an air of, yeah, unpredictability, and they were the guys that stood out for me in commentary.
Well, I have to say, I thought towards the end of the game, Ireland did look tired. Do you think that the pressure that England put on them started to tell towards the end? Or was it more a case of, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but that 6-2 split on the bench did start to take its toll?
I'd probably offer a different view, maybe. I think the timing of Marcus Smith's arrival was very important for England. And I think that puts maybe the spotlight, you know, and that's a fair observation to say that Ireland looked tired, but I think he offered energy that England had started to miss. If you look at, say, the opening 20 minutes, they were just fantastic. You know, they were just so much energy, but they had started to become a little bit more defensive, England, and kicked an awful lot more than they had done. And that was bringing Ireland slowly back into the game. And I just thought Marcus Smith's arrival was timely, and he was, for me, the main reason that England won that game. How many line breaks he created in his short time on the field, that energy and that ability to soften defensive lines made it very hard for Ireland to defend him. And, you know, they created that penalty advantage in the 22. And from an Irish perspective, you'd probably look at it and go, okay, they were in control of that and they should have been better in defence. But, you know, when you've played 75, 78 minutes and a player of Marcus Smith's calibre comes on and his ability to fracture defensive lines, which Ireland has struggled with all the way through the game. And he brought that energy, and you know, you look how well the players outside of him responded to him. Yeah, it was just it was a dimension that Ireland weren't able to cope with, really.
The game is played with emotion sometimes, and the margins are so fine. Ireland still contributed and played fantastically well. They've just had a side that had real desperation against them, you know, that had been written off by everyone. And England's challenge will be, well, do we need to be written off or playing against one of the better teams to produce our best rugby?
I mean, I guess for England now, the key is being able to follow this performance up in France at the weekend, and that it's not just a one-off in terms of their championship. I mean, France obviously yesterday against Wales started to show a bit more of a flicker of them old selves. Can you see England going there and putting in another disciplined performance in the same way that they did on Saturday? I mean, obviously they won't have the emotion of the home crowd behind them.
So I think this is where, as a coach, you're in your stripes. Andy Farrell has one challenge. Steve Borthwick now has a different challenge. So you can tap into the emotional energy every now and then. As a team, you don't want to be doing it too often because it is, by its very nature, quite draining. So those guys are going to be, the English team are going to be emotionally low, you know, within 24 hours after that game. And that's just, you know, that's the nature of that type of performance. You could see visibly what it meant to them on the pitch. You can't, to take a Paul O'Connell-ism here, you can't go to the well 2 weeks in a row like that. So this needs to be about the tactical, the non-emotional, has to be almost completely dispassionate performance, professional, clinical, and delivering that similar result. And that's the ultimate, that's the big challenge for England this week, is how do we reach those standards again without it being purely emotional? It has to be around, you know, the accuracy and, you know, that attention to detail that's been kind of missing in the first three games. So, you know, you look at the first line at Ollie Lawrence off the top, perfectly in between the 10, between Jack Crowley, Josh Van der Fleer, gets over the game line, and suddenly the game looks incredibly simple. So that all comes down to the accuracy and the, you know, the line-out function. The pass from 9 out in front of Ollie Lawrence was absolutely perfect. He didn't have to break stride, where previously that had not been the case. So now you need to be able to deliver that, but it's not about the emotional side. It has to be around, okay, well, that has to be the standard. And that will be a massive challenge, and we'll get a really good insight into the playing group and the coaching and everything that goes around it. Because as much as that win was important for England, it then will raise questions if the performance level isn't maintained 7 days later.
Exactly. Yeah, and you mentioned Marcus Smith. Would you start with Marcus Smith?
100%. In world rugby at the moment, you have to have an attacking player in the 9-10 slot. One of them has to be that. You look at Gibson Park for Ireland, Anton Dupont before he was going. The young kid that played for France yesterday, he was incredible. But he was the driving tempo in it. You look at Bowden Barrett for New Zealand. All the top teams, and South Africa even tried to get Manny Lipbok in there, who's an attacking flair player. Marcus Smith, build your team around him. Build your attack around him. Don't build a shape and a system and ask him to play it. Make the system and the shape flexible for him. Let him lead. Like, without doubt, he is the modern 10.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? The Marcus Smith, George Ford debate, because George Ford, by his standards, had probably a bit of an indifferent game. It was much improved on Scotland, where he played poorly, but he had a poor game kicking at Twickenham. His game management at key times was actually very good.
He seemed to be playing a lot flatter to the line, and that was getting the ball out a lot quicker as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think there is a need to do that, because England have struggled to get them people over the gain line. So it's going to be the most fascinating selection is that one at 10, as it always is. Owen Farrell was at Twickenham in the stadium watching the game.
He was,
And he must have been absolutely delighted for his former colleagues. But as I said, Steve Borthwick, does he go back to the because you've got to win the game against France all over again. Does he, you know, keep Marcus Smith literally warming up on the bench and to produce those little magic moments that ultimately are as important to the team as anything George Ford contributed, or does he give him free rein? And
well, that's a challenge now for Marcus Smith, isn't it? Because can he do it for a full 80 minutes for England, which I don't think from memory he has yet, has he really, when he started? So he doesn't want to be seen as an impact player.
No, but equally, if England are on the front foot and playing with that ruck speed that they had at the weekend and they're getting over the gain line with the regularity that they did, then that makes Marcus Smith. We haven't seen him at international level be playing in an England side that was so direct, so decisive, so kind of fast. They played fast, right? They showed innovation for the first time. We had a couple of lineouts that just came out of nowhere that really caught Ireland. They came up with a game that actually really surprised Ireland. And I think Steve Borthwick, massive credit. And if they are able to do something similar where they just play fast, not waiting for the crowd to get them into the game, not waiting for the last few plays of the game, then you will see a very different Marcus Smith, and we'll see more like the one we see at Quinn's every week, where he's much more ball in hand and quite cavalier.
Yeah, do you listen to Reflink when you're doing commentary on the side? Because listening to that, the hits, the noise that you were hearing, particularly when Chesham and George Martin were getting stuck in, it just showed, I mean, again, you touched on it last week, that physicality that they needed, and they definitely brought that, didn't they?
Oh, listen, there was a ferocity at the breakdown. And both sides of the ball, I thought England tackled spectacularly well. They made a mess of the breakdown in terms of the clear-outs so that Ireland weren't able to get any, well, as much quick ball as they used to. And it caused one or two talking points between Andy Farrell and Steve Borthwick going down the tunnel at half-time, having a pretty strong words with each other, because Andy Farrell sort of aggrieved at something that a couple of decisions that had been made against the England team. But nothing like a bit of rivalry to get things spiced up and going.
Exactly. So our QBE business insurance predictor didn't do so well this weekend. As we know, the predictor has simulated the tournament 10,000 times, producing the outcome from an astonishing 150,000 games, with every match replicated by generating a number of tries, conversions and penalties scored by each team. Now, the forecast said for round four, England 18, Ireland 27. As we know, the final score was 23-22 to England. Italy 14, Scotland 35 was the forecast. That ended up Italy 31, Scotland 29, and Wales 16, France 23, and that ended up Wales 24, France 45. So one result, one winner picked, but Lawrence, you did foresee an upset, I think, last week, but I don't think anybody expected there would be two.
No, incredible. And a high-scoring weekend of Six Nations rugby as well. You know, I think you look at those QBE predictions, and actually there was a lot more points scored in all those games. But we'll take it. I thought it was an outstanding weekend of rugby, just what the sport needed, and just what England needed as well.
Yeah. And what about Ireland now? Looking ahead to the Scotland game, you would assume that the championship should be theirs, barring some extraordinary results. But it's still a very, very positive championship for Ireland, isn't it? On the back of the disappointment of the World Cup.
Yeah, like, you know, the stats in the Six Nations reflect 75% in favour of the home nation. Like, you can never get away from that. Like, winning in England is, you know, while the Irish public might have gotten a little bit ahead of themselves, I don't think the Irish players did. Well, I think what they probably got was a little bit shocked by the level of, or the intensity that the English players brought that they possibly weren't expecting. And I'd say there'll be a lot of introspection from Irish players to go, we shouldn't have allowed that to happen. And they'll look at their preparation. And I thought the Welsh game would have been enough for them to be a little bit, have a little bit more edge. But I think Ireland, they lacked a bit of edge up front. And that's probably the first time we've said that for a while. And, you know, we kind of managed the game in bits and pieces, but ultimately I think we lost that kind of collisions up front. We struggled with the English defences, and England were basically putting nobody in the rucks, and we struggled to adapt on the pitch. And that's always been the kind of, with the way Ireland play, if you slow down their ruck speed, we don't have a brilliant kicking game anymore, and we're not particularly dangerous in counter-attacking. So England kind of nullified the Irish attack for large parts of it. Like, we still, you know, and you've got to put everything into context, and you don't suddenly just go, oh, Ireland are a bad team. You know, they still came back to score a try.
Exactly.
Or 8 minutes to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Ireland can still go out and win the championship, you know, completely, utterly within their control. This group will absolutely be pitching up on Monday morning going, okay, we lost a match to an English team who showed up and were more desperate than us. So let's never let that happen again. Because, like, you know, Lawrence would have played in matches, you know, when they were on that incredible run into the 2003 World Cup, where you lost matches that you knew you could have won. But it does serve as a timely reminder to go, we're not infallible. We're not, there's no hubris or anything like that. But they would just go, let's turn this into a positive. And that's what I'm saying to you earlier, is like about, say, Borthwick has one challenge, Andy Farrell, his challenge is, how do we turn this into a positive? It now is about not carrying that baggage. That's probably Ireland's biggest challenge is, as much as England need to replicate the performance, Ireland need to not bring that baggage from that loss with them. And they can't let it derail a championship.
Yeah, so looking at the tournament overall, who do you think the winners and losers are, Gordon, at the moment? I mean, Italy putting another fantastic performance at the weekend. I don't know how much of that you saw, but they clearly have, apart from the Ireland result, have come on leaps and bounds. We needed that, didn't we, in the Six Nations?
I think we did. I think, is there a loser really in the Six Nations this year?
Wales, maybe?
Was
that harsh?
Considering the financial structures that are, you know, the financial restrictions that have been put on Wales, I think, you know, they haven't got results, but they haven't been found wanting in any performances.
Yesterday's performance, I thought, you know, up until the last, you know, I mean, they were bulldozed, but they stuck in, they were brave, they were courageous, they played some really good rugby, Wales against France, didn't they? And yet, with the power that the French had. So I think Warren Gatland will take a lot of positives out of that game. I thought at scrum time, you know, even the referee was probably quite sympathetic, and France just had so much power. And Wales have to, and other sides in the tournament have to realise that we haven't got forwards or players that big. So, I thought Wales can take a lot of positives out of it, as long as they probably win this last game. So the pressure will be on them a little bit, and Italy could easily be, you know, 3-1, couldn't they, to be honest with you? I mean, you know, they robbed really in against the French with that kick, and could have easily done better against England.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, listen, Gordon, as always, it's been great chatting to you. Thank you so, so much for your time today. I would say good luck, but for the weekend, and I sort of mean it. But there's a slight chance that England could do something if Ireland come unstuck against Scotland. I very much doubt they will. I know that the Scotland and the Ireland team, you know, of late, there's a bit of beef between the two sides. And sport is about rivalry. So listen,
Scotland need a bounce back performance after losing to Italy.
Absolutely, yeah. We wish Ireland all the very best. And Gordon, thanks very much, and look forward to catching up with you again very soon.
My pleasure, guys.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Well, now it's time to bring in the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent, Nick Purriwell. Nick, plenty of positives to talk about at the weekend, and also we're going to look ahead to next weekend, Super Saturday. Do you feel that things are finally starting to fall into place for Steve Borthwick?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they needed a statement win to vindicate what they've been doing. And I think I like what Steve Borthwick has said all along in terms of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. I like the fact that he built effectively a panic stations game plan for the World Cup where they played within themselves. They didn't make it too difficult for the players. It almost worked perfectly. It ended up working quite well. They didn't explain more broadly what they were going to do behind the scenes after the World Cup. And I think that was sensible as well. And they've expanded the game plan since then. And Borthwick was very clear in the middle of the week last week about saying, yes, I understand this is my 20th match in charge of the England team, but actually it's the fourth because we've had a total reset for the Six Nations. I think England needed that as well. But more than anything, to vindicate all of that, they needed a big win. And they've got one now. And obviously it's easy for them to say Ireland are the best team in the world because it pumps their ties up if they beat them. They're not the best team in the world because they haven't proven it, have they? They didn't go win a World Cup. And they're a very, very good team. England have beaten a very, very good team. But it was a very, very good team that didn't play that well on the day. England stopped them playing to that level. England play very well, but they also quite messy, which they also well aware of. They seem to be quite relaxed about making mistakes, and the key to that is trying to shake them off and keep going. And they did that at the weekend. So really, it's kind of ground zero for Steve Borthwick, you know, version 2.0. And so let's see what happens next.
I see that somebody this morning stolen our Borth ball as well. That was ours, wasn't it? We should have patented that. And I have to ask you, we are all now members of the media. I appreciate that, but you more than us because you were in the firing line with him. After the game, Ben Earl was specifically pointed to say, well, you've called us the worst team in the world. We've taken on board the criticism. Do you think that was the right thing to say at the time, or should have been celebrating more about the achievement? Because I don't think any of us said they were the worst England team ever, did we?
I think it's pointed at Ronan O'Gara, because I think he put something on Instagram with a picture of the caption, Enorme, which obviously referenced Ronan O'Gara's dressing room speech, you know, in his sort of half French, half English to La Rochelle. So I think it's pointed at O'Gara. No, I think it was misplaced. I think it's probably just the difficulty with a post-match interview, you know, banging on the final whistle is the adrenaline's running through you and the mental state you have to get yourself into to play at that level is so pumped up. You know, basically, he's answered the question in match mode, hasn't he? I think, really. So he's kind of gone in, you know, feet first because he's just come off the pitch where he's smashing lumps out of guys who are sort of almost twice his size, some of them. And, you know, he had to get himself in the mindset to do that. So I think, yeah, I think it was the wrong thing to say. I think we can forgive him for that because obviously, England did win, and I think when you win, you earn the right to kind of make your point, don't you? But I think it is about time England get off this high horse of we've been written off, say, siege mentality. They're not Millwall. It's going to get very boring very quickly, especially if they start winning. And really, the response to that is them saying, oh, well, everyone's written us off. It's like, okay, we'll install you as favourites for this match away in France then. How do you handle that? Because if we tell you your favourites, you can't say you've been written off. So go on then. You beat Ireland, now go to France and justify it and beat France in their backyard. If you do that, fair play. Otherwise, just dial it down a little bit.
Yeah, you can see how pumped up Ben Earl was because by how pumped up Mr. Dallaglio was on the sidelines when the winning kick went over. It got me. So, yeah. So looking ahead to France this weekend, we've just heard from Gordon Darcy who said that Marcus Smith should start against the French. Do you agree?
I think if he hadn't been injured on the eve of the tournament, I think Marcus Smith would have started at 10 for the tournament. Yeah, I think it's a massive dice roll if they do. He's very capable. You know, in many ways, he's the right guy. I still feel for George Ford a little bit because I feel like he has looked at this opportunity and he knows it's his big chance to step into the light almost and be the man. And I feel like he maybe just blinked and that's a very un-George Ford thing to do, so measured in so many ways. He still brings an awful lot to this team, and they've got to go to France and start from scratch with, you know, building a game plan, playing in the right areas. And I think one of the things that is really going to be quite smart about this Steve Borthwick game plan, when it balances itself out and they get to where they want to be with it, is in reality, it's about mixing the best parts of the World Cup game plan and the best parts of this new game plan. And realistically, all that means is playing rugby in the right areas of the field. And if you want to get into the right areas of the field to play the right rugby, then there isn't anybody better than George Ford. That said, Marcus Smith can do things that no other player in the England squad can. So if they stick to the very aggressive, more expansive plan, then I think Marcus Smith starts. But that would be slightly harsh on George Ford.
Yeah, I think a lot of people got a bit confused when we were talking about England changing the style of rugby from the World Cup to the Six Nations with a few new players, new coaches coming in. But the one thing that the basic ingredients of any successful side is the intensity, the emotion, and the physical sort of violence that you bring to areas of your game. And I thought right from the start, England tapped into that and they had that. It does take its toll though, Nick, sometimes, doesn't it? And the injury to Cunningham South looked a nasty one, and we wish him well with his recovery. Faye Wabosso, you know, I mean, what a week he had.
Outstanding,
you know, medical exams 1 week, and then, you know, England debut and just played so, so well. Steve Borthwick has gone from 2 weeks ago picking the same group of players, more or less, who let England down, to 2 weeks later picking a group that have just been heroic, really. I mean, there's nothing short of heroes over the weekend. Will he be tempted to tinker a little bit? Because you know him better than we do. He's a man who likes to look at his opponent and then pick a team based on his opponents. But surely a lot of those players deserve the benefit of the doubt after such an emphatic win.
Absolutely. And I think tailoring the performance to opponents is something that was probably more part of the World Cup game plan as well, just in terms of while you're building where you're getting to. Because I think, Lawrence, is something you've touched on before. You want to get to a point where you play a certain way, that's what you do, and you're good enough that you can put it out there and other teams have to deal with it, have to respond to you. So I think they do want to build an attitude of, well, we're England, you know, this is what we do, so you come at us. And I think they do want to get to that. And so I couldn't see massive changes now. I think, you know, you could see the benefit in Ollie Lawrence for having had a game under his belt. And I think the way he went at the weekend, I think he's imposed himself on that 12 shirt and just shown that, yes, well, he's carving up for Bath as a 13. I think 12 is the right position for him to be playing in this England team, given the resources, the requisite resources that England have. And yeah, I think Borthwick deserves a lot of credit for having the strength of his convictions for not making big changes from Scotland to this game. And that's paid off. So yeah, I think if they can, they'll look to have a fairly settled situation. Cunningham South, even though he's on the bench, he is a loss. I mean, immediately that first carry, he made a big impact, and his physicality is something that would be difficult for them to replace. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously George Martin had a good game and others as well. Just on Faye Wabosso, you know, he got on the ball so much, and I think that was the key thing. There's been a few young wingers have come into the England team and they haven't gone looking for work. When the ball wasn't coming their way, they didn't feel like comfortable or confident to go looking for it. And he didn't ask for a second opportunity. And he made a massive impact. And this is a guy who was playing for Taunton Titans in a National League One relegation battle 10 months ago. So,
incredible.
You know, it's phenomenal. And yes, he was on loan from Exeter, but his rise has been phenomenal. And the other thing is, we were speaking to him after the game, and he was less than a year old when Danny Kerr made his senior debut for Leeds in 2003.
Whoa.
So, you know, full debut and 100 cap, you know, coming together to make things happen for that England victory. And I think that's a really neat way to bookend the two sides of the Steve Borthwick new start as it is. So, yeah, I'm really pleased for them all that they've come together to pull off a win at the right time, because I think it's a really crucial time for them to get a win of that magnitude.
Special mention for Danny Kerr, though, DC. You chatted to him after the game
with his
kids, which was quite amusing, to say the least. But what a stalwart for England.
Well, it's stalwart for England, but you just have to sit back and admire the longevity of playing, you know, and still having the appetite and probably playing, if not the best rugby, some of the best rugby of his career. I mean, you know, Eddie Jones gave him a little four year layoff, didn't he? Which was which obviously either has extended his career at one end, you can look at it that way,
or, true.
But to win 100 caps, I mean, he had a box kicking game that Eddie Jones implemented against Japan, and then we never saw him again. So
no.
I think he's been magnificent. It was funny because when he came on, Mitchell played well, don't get me wrong, very well. And Danny Kerr came on, and you know, and then him and Marcus Smith were there to lift the tempo. And his first couple of kicks were probably not of the quality that you'd expect from someone like him. And then when he kicked the ball at the end, everyone's probably thinking, what have you done? But it turned into a fairy tale ending, both for him and for England. So I thought it was brilliant. What a way to celebrate. Remember your 100th cap. I think, Jason Leonard presenting him the golden cap, I think, that you get given, the golden small little trophy that you get given. And I'm sure they had a couple of pints to enjoy as well.
Yeah, should we just have a look then at this weekend's QBE predictor, what we're forecasting? So we've got France 30, England 19, Ireland 27, Scotland 15, and Wales 25, Italy 15. Which of those, Lawrence, do you agree with? I actually think, well, maybe Ireland should probably win against Scotland, but the Scots need a performance. The other two will probably, hopefully, flip the other way, won't they?
Well, I mean, you know, this unpredictability of the... I mean, let's start with France first, because, you know, they've been poor up until that game in Cardiff, and then suddenly they've got some power. Gregory Aldrich back. Le Garot was, you know...
Have you ever thrown a reverse pass like that? That was brilliant, wasn't it, to Ramos? I mean, he had no idea where that was going, did he? I mean, he knew it was going in the middle of the pitch, but...
Listen, when you're in French, you say you know, of course, champagne. I mean, it was some serious. But the mixture of their, you know, the running lines, the hands, and then suddenly that power game when they got close to the Welsh line. I mean, let's be honest, they were quite wasteful actually in the 22.
Well, they had 12 attacking entries into the red zone versus 4 by the Welsh. Yeah, so but, it could have been a lot more points, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if Luke Pearce had been...
not kept getting in the way.
Luke Pearce, I thought, had a magnificent game. But, you know, and some people might say, well, when the ball's at the back of the scrum, just get rid of it. You know, and if every referee refereed like that, you know, there'd be very few scrum penalties. England would have won a World Cup.
Yeah.
And...
The French only gave away 3 penalties in the entire game, which, you know, they've transformed themselves almost in the space of a week as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they needed that. Boy, did they need that, because, you know, there's a few question marks going on in France. So, listen, it's going to be fascinating with England now, because, as Nick said, they go into it not as overwhelming underdogs like they were recently. No. And, you know, we all know, whether it's in Lyon, Marseille or Paris, winning over there is a tough thing to do. Ireland, Scotland, I don't think people are aware, you know, sport is about rivalry, but these two teams do not like each other.
No, they don't, do they?
No, because the Scots have got this habit of talking themselves up, you know, when they, well, they certainly have historically against the Irish, and then you come home. But 27-15 from QBE, I think Scotland, you know, a bit better than that. I think it'll be a closer game. And then Wales, Italy, well, Wales have, you know, I thought they did well, Nick, against the French. They hung on in there. It could have been a lot worse, and they scored some bloody good tries of their own. Now, I thought they were very impressive, but if they don't win against Italy, then, you know...
First wooden spoon since 2013, I think, for the Welsh.
So, and Italy themselves, you know, but for a couple of decisions, could easily be, you know, could have won 3 games and were magnificent against Scotland.
Yeah. What do you think, Nick?
I think Wales are... whenever you have a situation with a team like Wales, if they go to this tournament without a win, obviously big questions to get asked. But I don't know what people would expect Warren Gatland to do with the raw materials he has. And I think he's done the right thing by starting this total reset. And I think there's been snippets enough in games to see that if you back Warren Gatland to do what he does with a group of players that he believes in and thinks have the right attitude and mindset, in 2 or 3 years' time, they'll be a good side. And I think if he is backed to the hilt, then I think Wales will be ready to be competitive by the next World Cup. The big question is whether that's enough. You know, is anybody satisfied with that? Is anybody going to let that be the case? Well, what we're seeing with Italy is the fruit of a lot of labour and a lot of investment in the club game, and you know, players coming in. There's money there for signings, and obviously bringing in people like Lewis Leiner just adds to a feel-good factor. And Gonzalo Quesada, who's been on the pod before, that we know well, has proven that you don't necessarily need a great deal of time to pull something together. Certainly how he's got Italy's attack firing very, very quickly, that's extremely impressive and deserves a great deal of credit. I mean, that's going to be a hell of a game, isn't it, really, with all the pressure that's on it in those ways. But I think if Italy were to fall the wrong side of the result there, then I think we shouldn't take away from what they've achieved in this tournament, because I think it's magnificent and they deserve a lot of credit for that. Because let's not forget, in the World Cup in the last Six Nations, they were miles away from this. So, and the last thing to say that overall for the whole tournament is this post-World Cup Six Nations is normally a bit of a strange one. It can be a bit odd. And so I think we've potentially seen, with the weekend just gone, we've potentially seen that manifest itself. So as much as, you know, England will know it's a massive result, Steve Borthwick's not the kind of guy to get carried away either. So I think they know the size of the win, but they'd also keep it in the wider context and hopefully they, you know, keep their feet on the ground and push forward, because there is still a lot of work to do, but there's also a lot of potential there. So it's exciting.
Well, this week is a big one in preparation for England-France. Lawrence, I know you'll be in Lyon at the weekend, but first of all, you've got Cheltenham and then a bit of skiing to navigate. So hopefully you'll be in one piece when you arrive there on Saturday.
Yeah, I do like to give myself quite a kind of challenging and reasonably tough itinerary. But listen, the Irish were in fine fettle coming to Twickenham. They'll be, you know, they'll lick their wounds and they'll come back fighting for Cheltenham.
I'm I'm sure they will.
I'm sure that they'll claim the victories that that maybe their rugby team weren't able to achieve on this occasion. But no, really looking forward to it. And what a finale we have.
Yeah, we do. I'm Cheltenham on Wednesday and thoroughly looking forward to it. Nick, you're obviously on your way to France as well. I hope you both make it there. I'm sure we'll have lots to wrap up next week when we look back on what has been another fantastic tournament.
Well, it should be a great game to end this year's Six Nations. And of course, as Steve says, we will be back next week to round up all the action. So until then, thank you to Steve and Nick. Thanks, of course, to our special guest, Gordon Darcy, and to our host, VoxPod Studios, and to you for listening. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.